When witches go rioting and black cats are seen, the moon laughs and whispers, 'tis near Halloween. And it's 10 o'clock Thursday with a mood firm with glee for you tuned into the perfect place, right here on KPFT. Happy Halloween from So What's Your Story? The coolest place on your dial and a show that can only be enjoyed on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication at the University of Houston downtown. You ain't heard nothing yet. It's October 31st. And shadows of a thousand years rise again unseen. Voices whisper in the trees. Tonight is Halloween. And there's no better place to celebrate this frightening festive night than to tell scary stories. Blood-curdling, petrifying, menacing tales that will keep us up all night. And I've got just the person to tell these creepy yarns. Through his effortlessly fluid style, storyteller Brian Harrod uses storytelling to build sustainable community and cultivate a cultural spirit among those fortunate enough to be part of his audience. He has a special interest in tales from Ireland and Scotland, and knowledge of what seems to be as unlimited a range and variety of stories as one can have. Whatever he delivers, Brian tells the type of stories that touch, tickle, and tease his listeners. And tonight, he's going to add torment by spinning tales that will compel you to keep the lights turned on. Member and past president of the Houston Storytellers Guild, guest on this show on a number of occasions when it was called Story Time, and a really good sport for being here tonight. Brian, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Hank. Thanks for having
me on. This is great. Did you take your daughter trick-or-treating?
We sure did. We had a good old-fashioned door-to-door trick-or-treating.
And Alana just took the candy, dumped it on the table, and decided what she wanted to keep and what you're going to throw away, something like that?
Kind of like that.
Now, you were also a teller at the Guild's Skyline Screamers the other night.
That's right. We had a group of storytellers up in the Heights telling stories.
That's such a great event. And I know that you've got some really, you've got a great collection of some scary stories. And tell us what your first one's going to be.
Sure. It's called The Uncle Skeleton. And it's a story originally from Mexico. So there once were three boys, and their father and mother were lost in a car accident. And so they were adopted by their uncle, and their uncle treated them very nice. He was always gave them enough to eat and sent them off to school with maybe not the best clothes in the world, but very clean ones, and they were always treated very well. But there was one odd thing about their uncle. Every night before he put them into bed, he would tuck the sheets underneath their chins, and he would tell them. He would say, "Whatever you hear or whatever you think you see, don't get out of bed." And so the boys would nod their heads rapidly, and he would disappear. But during the night, some nights when they didn't fall asleep immediately, they would hear sounds. Sometimes it was laughing or singing, but always kind of a clicking sound, and they were very, very curious about what it was. So one night after he put them to bed, the oldest boy said to the middle boy, "We've got to go see what it is." And the middle boy said, "We have to be very, very quiet." And the youngest boy said, "I'm scared." And so they creaked open the door, and they walked down the hallway. They peered around the corner, and they didn't see anything. They walked down the hallway a little further, and they went into the kitchen. They peered around the kitchen door. And what should they see in the kitchen? But the room was filled with skeletons. And these skeletons had long wings like a dragonfly behind them, rainbowy, shimmering. And the scum of the skeletons all wore hats. Some of them had big sombreros, and other ones had small bowler hats. Some of the skeletons were playing cards while others were drinking, and still others were playing the guitar and dancing, and they were all talking to each other and having a good time. The boys were quiet as cats. As they snuck back into their room, they closed the door as silently as they could. When they were in bed, the oldest boy said, "What are we going to do? We think that our uncle's a skeleton." And the boy said, "Let's wait till tomorrow. We'll follow him out and see where he goes and what he does." And the youngest boy said, "I'm scared." So they went to school the next day, and they came home, and they had their dinner as they normally did, and they took their bath, they got into their PJs, and they went into bed, and their uncle tucked them underneath the covers and looked them in the eye and said those same words to them again: "Whatever you hear or whatever you see, or whatever you think may be going on, don't get out of bed. And they all nodded their heads quickly, and he closed the door behind him. And as soon as the door was closed, the oldest boy said, "So we've got to follow him." And the middle boy says, "We have to be careful, and we have to be quiet." And the youngest boy said, "I'm scared." So when they thought that they had heard the front door open up, they opened up their bedroom door, they snuck down the hall, they opened up the front door as quietly as they could, and they saw that in the distance the sun was going down, and they saw their uncle disappearing into the woods. They crept out across the grass as quietly as they could. They made their way to the woods, and there they saw into the deepest part their uncle going. And when he got to that middle part of the woods, he said a phrase. He said, "Skin, skin, come off of me." And just like you might take your clothes off at the end of the day, the man's skin came off of him. And there was a skeleton with those dragonfly wings behind him. And he fluttered the wings, and the skeleton rose through the air, and with a click, clack, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack, he flew through the air. The oldest boy said, "Our uncle is a skeleton. What are we going to do?" And the middle boy said, "I have an idea. Let's run back to the house as quickly as we can." And the youngest boy said, "I'm scared." And so they made their way back to the house as quickly as they could. And when they got into the kitchen, the oldest boy said, "I have an idea. Let's open up the pantry." And the youngest boy said, "I think I know what you want to do." And the youngest boy said, "I'm scared." And so they opened up the pantry, and they got salt, and they had pepper and lemon juice out. And they ran back out there to where, in the middle of the forest, their uncle's skin was. And they took that pepper, and they took that salt, and they took that lemon juice, and they put it upon his skin. And they hid behind a tree for him to come back. And he was gone all night long. And when the sun just started to rise above the trees, they heard that sound again. Click, clack, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. And they knew their uncle was coming back. They peered around the trees, and what should they see? But they saw that skeleton come back with those diaphanous wings. And the skeleton said, "Skin, skin, back on me." And the skin rose up, and it rose over his legs and his waist and his chest, his arms and his face. And it was as though when you put on clothes that are wet, it didn't quite fit. And when that last piece of skin came over the skeleton, he called out, "Ah, my skin, it burns. Skin, skin, off of me." And the skin came down in that puddle just as it was before. And as the sun rose up, the skeleton went click, clack, click, clack, click, clack into the darkest part of the woods. The boys ran back home. They called some relatives. They said that their uncle had gone away, but they didn't tell him any details. And so they went and lived with other relatives. And from that day forward, sometimes in the night, outside their windows, they would hear that sound. Click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. And they knew that that was their uncle flying around in the night searching for his skin. And that's a story for you.
Great. Thank you, Brian. That was great. You know, I love it when you tell stories because I see them unfold right in front of you. How do you make these choices? Where do you find these stories? I know this one hails from Mexico. And where do you find these stories?
Sure. So I find a lot of the stories that I tell in books. If you go to the in the library, 398.2 section is filled with folk tales. If you go, one of the special things I like to do is go to old bookstores, and you find a lot of the kind of Victorian era stories, which have very particular language, and they're not quite as subdued as some of the folk tale collections.
I'm not real sure a lot of people who are listening, who are under the age of 50, have ever been to a library, but they really do exist. Sure. I just wanted to let people know. My son once asked, "Are libraries around anymore?" I said, "Oh, yeah, they're big buildings. They have books in them and all that sort of thing." So that's a great place to find them. You talk about sustaining community through a story, and I know I wanted to talk about that a little bit later, but the segue seems to be there. Talk a little bit about what that means. What does it mean to use storytelling to offer a sustainable community, to produce one?
Sure. I used to do a lot of work in retirement communities, collecting people's stories. I got a grant from what was then called the Harris County Council on the Arts. And I collected stories with youth and with older people. So the young people were telling their stories and the older people were telling theirs as well. And I collected it into a book and a CD and gave it to the participants. And you know, these places are just tremendous repositories of people's life stories, and they need to be told need to be heard.
I was telling you a little bit earlier before the show how I love watching people tell stories, because suddenly they realize they're natural storytellers. They have a story to tell. And some of the best storytellers are the ones who never dreamed they could ever tell a story with any level of effectiveness. When you collect stories from children, from adults, do you think there's any difference? Is there any difference behind their motivation or their incentive to tell stories?
I think that they're very much the same. I think the older people maybe think that their stories are not worthwhile as much. They're not they think that people have heard those stories before. It's not important. And I think that with young people, they're more likely to tell a story because it's all new.
Yeah.
You know, it's this has just happened to me.
Yeah, that's an interesting insight. I know tonight is all about fun, but we've got to talk about storytelling, because that in and of itself is a lot of fun. I find that a lot of adults are desperate to tell their stories. They feel that somehow this is the only way to maintain a sense of immortality, mm-hmm. the only way to really validate their lives. But it's a very, very powerful phenomenon to watch. And tonight is all about fun. It is Halloween, so we'll get back to that. And Skin, Come Off of Me. What was that again? What was that?
Skin, Come Off of Me.
Right. I'm So Cold, He.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, there we go. Very good. And I noticed that with a lot of these stories, not a very profound thought, but nevertheless a thought, and that's what you get for eating too much candy. A lot of this is based on a dare. So in other words, these stories are predicated on a dare. Don't you do that. Don't come near me. Don't undo that ribbon. Don't follow me. And the person who follows that dare obviously gets into trouble. Is that a typical trend?
Yeah, I think a lot of the scary stories and folk tales have an element of prohibition in them, mm-hmm. and that something gets broken. And really, a lot of stories like that are ones in which the resolution of the story is somehow how that prohibition gets made whole again,
right. yeah.
either by retribution from a ghost, or it's are doing right by a ghost, so
yeah.
the ghost can then go and be in peace.
That's cool. So ghost stories are like any other story. There has to be some element of tension,
mm-hmm.
some conflict,
mm-hmm.
and in your mind, it's some element of prohibition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid with guest storyteller Brian Herod on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston and 90.3 in Livingston. This is Hank Rubicek with sidekick Roxy Russell. We're going to hear from her in just a couple of minutes, because we just taught her how to speak. Roxy, how are you?
I'm good, Hank. How are you?
I am doing great. Do anything Halloween friendly today?
I actually did my Halloween celebration the weekend before.
What does that mean?
I dressed up in a costume last weekend. So I had no dressing up this weekend.
Yeah. Speaking of costumes, I don't know where the segue is, but Jeff, our engineer and our friend over there. Jeff, it's your birthday as well, isn't it? Huh? Don't hide from us.
Thank you.
Oh, don't just say thank you. Did you do anything fun for your birthday?
Hooray.
Did you do anything fun for your birthday? Anything fun? Jeff? Oh, he's not answering me. You know what he's doing right now? He's putting on a costume. I think it's his ex-wife. That's what he's putting on right now. And he's going trick-or-treating. Very good. Thank you, Jeff. Okay. Go to a Halloween party and have some fun. He's so embarrassed. What a guy. Let's keep the party going, Brian. Let's tell us another story.
Okay, great. This story actually comes from after the Civil War. And in those days, there were folks who were displaced by all of the wartime activities. And so this happens about a man and a woman, and they were married and searching around for some place to settle down. They would typically go from farmhouse to farmhouse, and some places would put them up for a night, and other places they would work in the fields for a while or do odd jobs, but they never could quite settle down. And this happened to be one of those cold, kind of rainy November nights. And the sun was starting to set over this band of trees. And as they walked closer to this house in the distance, they saw that it might be a place to stay for the night. It was one of those old-style mansions. And out in front, there were the fields. And back behind it, there were a band of trees. And the man said to the woman, said, well, maybe we can go there and they'll put us up for the night. Maybe they have a barn or something. We can stay in there. She said, that's a good idea. Let's go around the back, because in the back, that's where the kitchen's at. And that's where you're supposed to go if you're looking for work. So they made their way around the house, and as it got closer, they saw that this place hadn't been lived in for a while. The fields all around it were fallow and weeds were growing up. And when they got closer to the house, they noticed that the paint was chipping off and some of the columns in the front had started to tip over. And there was a great hole in the roof and the rain had been falling down in there. And as they looked through the windows, they saw cobwebs and dust. And it looked as though the place had not been touched for many, many years. The ornate furniture lay still and covered in dust. And as they made their way around the back to the back of the house, they knocked upon the kitchen door, and there was no answer. And they knocked again upon the kitchen door, and still no answer. They knocked a third time upon that door, no answer. So the man said, well, there's probably no one here, so we can go inside. Maybe it's a little bit drier in here than it is outside. So they opened up the door, and they went inside the kitchen, and it was an amazing sight. And what was so amazing about it was that it looked as though someone had just left. There was no dust anywhere. The pots and pans were clean. There was no rust upon them. There was still a little bit of fire in the firebox. And when they went over to the ice box, it was still cool in there. And they saw that there were some eggs and there were some milk in there and some, even a little bit of pat of butter. And so the woman said, well, go out and get some more wood for the fire and I'll cook us up something to eat. So the man went outside, and the woman got down a bowl, and she got some sugar and flour and some eggs, and she started to make pancakes. And as she was mixing the batter together with a spoon, she heard something. She heard a sound, thump, 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 thump. And in the kitchen in those days, sometimes there was a door, and that door would go down into a root cellar, and that's where people would store their goods over the wintertime. And she thought she heard that sound coming from that root cellar up into that door. But she said, you know, my man will be back soon, and I'm just going to keep on cooking. So she laid out the pancakes. She poured them out on the griddle. And as the smoke and the smell of those cakes cooking began to fill up that kitchen, and she started to relax and feel a bit more comfortable, she heard that sound again. Thump, 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 thump. And she looked over there, and she was sure that sound was coming up from that stairwell in the root cellar. And she just kept on turning over the pancakes and thinking nothing of it, thinking that she was going to be okay no matter what happened, the worst that had happened to her in her life. And then all of a sudden she heard that sound again, thump, 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 thump. And the door that went down to that cellar opened up and went, and she looked over there, and there was someone standing in the doorway. The boots were old and filled with mud. The trousers had holes in them, were frayed at the cuffs. Old flannel shirt on, and it had worn down, and the hands were all muddy and kind of gray. And when she looked up to see who it was that was standing there in that doorway, she couldn't tell who it was because whoever was there had no head. And she did what you should always do if you see a ghost. She said, what in God's name do you want? Well, the body turned around in that doorway, and it pointed down the stairs. And it began to walk down the stairs, thump, 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 thump. And by about this time, her husband had come back and with a great load of wood. And when he saw the body and he saw her, well, he dropped the wood and it clattered all over the kitchen floor. But the woman and the man followed that body down those stairs, thump, 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 thump. Thump, 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 thump. And it came down into that root cellar. It had all been cleared out. But it pointed over to one of the corners. The man took a shovel. And he got that shovel and he started to dig in the corner. And he dug and he dug and he dug. And he hit upon something hard. And he reached down there into that hole. And he pulled up something in both of his hands. And as he pulled it up, he looked at it. And what he had in his hands was that head. And the head began to speak to him. And it's the same way I'm speaking to you right now. And the head said, I was once a rich, rich man, and I own these lands, and I own this house. But one day some robbers came, and they wanted to find out where I hid my gold, but I wouldn't tell them. And so they killed me, and they buried my body in one place, and they buried my head someplace else, so that I could never rest until someone was as brave as you. And now I've got something for you. And the body reached over and it grabbed the head and it put it underneath its arms and it started to walk up that stair, those stairs, step, thump, 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 thump. And it made its way all the way to the top, and the man and the woman followed right behind it, made its way through the kitchen, out through the back door, and through those woods. And as it went through those woods, the wet leaves crunched underneath their feet, and the wind and the rain dropped all around them. And they came to the right in the middle of the forest, the biggest oak tree they had ever seen. And that body pointed down there to the roots. And the man took the shovel and he began to dig. And he dug and he dug and he dug and he dug to hit upon something hard. And he reached down there into that hole. And this time when he pulled something out, it was a box. He opened up the box and looked inside. And what should he see but more gold than he could even imagine. The man and the woman touched their hands upon it. And then they looked at each other. And they looked over to thank the man for this gold. But he was gone. Well, they took that gold and they fixed up that house and they fixed up all the fields around there. And they never wanted for anything ever again. And no matter how many late nights that woman spent in that kitchen, cooking up a meal or fixing something for their family, she never heard that sound again. Thump, 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 coming up from the basement. And that's a story for you.
Hey, I bought this with the other 10-year-olds at Target, and I'm going to play it as much as I want. I'm just letting everybody know that. That was great.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of ghost stories took place in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Really did. Ambrose Bierce, you know, occurs at Owl Creek Bridge. Mm-hmm. You know that story. It's not a haunted story, but it's always eerie. And to me, it's a great Halloween story. It's a... You know, about the person who just, he blows up a bridge, he imagines his escape, and it all takes place in about 30 seconds, and you don't know until the end of the film. It's so eerie, and there's something very eerie about the Civil War. What a great, great story. Thank you, Brian. Mm-hmm. That was great. Roxy, it's time for Tip for the Teller, a segment when we learn something about storytelling from a question asked by one of our listeners. I understand we've got a seasonal question.
We do. Our seasonal question comes from Marcy, and her question, she writes, Hank, I'm hoping you answer this on your Halloween show. What is the scariest story you have ever read? That's a good question.
Oh, it is. And Marcy, thank you for writing that one in. And to me, this one is real easy schmeasy. It's Edgar Allan Poe's The Tell-Tale Heart. An unnamed narrator strives to convince the reader of his sanity while describing how he chopped up a little old man into little pieces, hiding the body parts under the floorboards, intensifying the eeriness. He has no feelings of hatred or resentment as he meticulously foreshadows the climax. I put my hand on his heart and hold it there many minutes until it beats no more. But the old man's heart still beats, and somehow the heart is going to tell on him. That, Marcy, is fear incarnate. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. If you've got questions about storytelling that you'd like me to answer on the air or want to be a guest on So What's Your Story, Roxy is about to tell you how to make that happen.
Well, we want you to send your questions or story ideas to ruby.story@gmail.com. That's ruby.story@gmail.com. And we will get back to you. And get ready, because we will be asking you, So What's Your Story listeners, on December 19th and 26th. And we will take in your call-ins and hear about your 2 to 3 minute holiday stories.
That's going to be great. I can't wait for that. Thank you, Roxy. And I'm looking forward to listeners calling in and telling us all about their holidays. Please. Next week, music educator Kapila Love will be here to share tender stories of the heart, the perfect segue to some incredible student tellers from Johnston Middle School, who's going to be here in November and early December, all here on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston. Another great tip. Every story lover must run, not walk, to become a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild. We hold a monthly story swap on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House, 1811 Heights Boulevard. Check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all of the fun happenings, like Celebration on November 23rd at the Black Lab. Brian, you've been a longtime member of the Guild.
Yes, I have.
Say something great about us.
That's where I started telling stories publicly, and it's a great nurturing environment where you can practice on stories that you're maybe not too comfortable with and get really great feedback from folks who have been doing storytelling for quite a time.
Now, do you do professional storytelling now,
mm-hmm.
right? Tell us a little bit about what you've done and what you're about to do. Can you do that?
Sure.
Got some gigs coming up?
I don't have too many gigs coming up this fall, but I just told stories at a Halloween party for adults, and that was really great because they were a good, great captive audience.
Yeah.
And in the past, I've done work in retirement communities. I've done work with writers in the schools, likewise, and also after-school programs. And so it's a lot of catch-as-catch-can as far as professional storytelling goes.
Right.
But once you find the right audience and a listener who's really engaged, it makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, what are some things that you tell the writers in schools? Because you're an oral storyteller.
Sure.
And oral telling and written words are oftentimes different.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw the line? What do you tell them? How do you distinguish between the two?
Sure. I think that one of the common themes is you have to have a good sense of plot and a good sense of tension and rising. So when I was teaching kids, we would talk, as one of the chief things we would talk about for third graders, fourth graders, was, you know, how do you have to structure a story so that it makes it interesting, and then there's some resolution to a problem, and then there's some denouement, there's some, you know, ending to the story.
Right. How do you get them started? They say, I don't know how to start.
Actually, what I did was, that came across really well to them, was the Scooby-Doo method, which was there's an introduction, there's always a place, there's always some problem that happens, mm-hmm. they do some stuff to solve the problem, at the end they always catch the crook, and then they say, this is a crook, and then they have a few moments where they leave. And so kids could identify with that, and then they could also kind of fill in their own pieces to it.
Yeah. So if I asked you, okay, how do I get started, what question would you ask me? Ask me a question. So you'd say, think of a character, or what would you do?
Sure, I would say, well, think of a character or think of a place.
Okay, I'm thinking of a teenager in Detroit. Okay. Now what do I do?
Okay, well, some problem that teenager has then.
Okay, he's running away from home.
Okay, and then what are all the things that he does to solve his problem then?
Well, he contemplates going back home. He runs farther away. He steals a car, and he knows that none of that is working.
Yeah, so what's then the final solution to his problem?
Final solution is that he gets married.
Mm. And then what happens at the end?
He realizes that's not good either, so he goes back home. Okay, but I get the idea.
Sure.
And you could really make it as complex as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can refine it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous, fabulous. Mm-hmm. Now I have a question for you. What am I? Go, ceiling, go.
Go, ceiling, go. I don't know.
A ceiling fan. I just wanted to share that with you. Just wanted to share that with you. Well, this one.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you.
Oh, my gosh. Boomers, you got to love that one, huh? David Seville, enjoy the Witch Doctor as we kind of sign off here in a minute. Brian, thank you so much for your signature style and for helping us have a fun-filled Halloween. I had a ball.
Great.
And to my rockin' listeners, keep loving the great story, and I'll keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubinchak on So What's Your Story, one of the Power Hour programs on this Thursday night on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. Make KPFT a part of your everyday and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Scooter is next with The Inner Side. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank Rubinchak, always reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after.
Find myself a guy that's so much wiser, and he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say.
KPFT has just concluded its last fun drive of 2013. If you made a pledge this time, thank you very much. Your donation keeps this station on the air. If you promise to send a check, your envelope will arrive in the mail soon. Make sure to honor your commitment and send that back to KPFT. Most pledge drive gifts should be arriving in the coming weeks. Keep an eye out for that. If you have questions, call our membership department at 713-526-4000. And if you missed the opportunity to donate, visit kpft.org. Thank you again. This is KPFT Houston.